Malcolm Honlein is Executive Vice Chairman of the Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations, joins us for the weekly update. Mr. Honlein, welcome back to JM in the AM.
Well, it's good to be with you.
Appreciate that very much. The massacre, of course, is what's dominant in the news of the Jewish world this week. Three American citizens among those who were butchered, who were massacred in the shul in Har Nof in Yerushalayim. What did you think of the United States' reaction to the episode?
Well, first, as you know, I was in Israel, and I go to the funeral of Rabbi Tversky, although it was very hard to get near the huge turnout and masses of people who came and the emotions that were evident there and throughout the city and, in fact, throughout the country, across all sectors. And it's sad that the only time you see this kind of unity is in response to the war or to response to this incident. But there was it was something that struck every person, and the brutality, the barbaric nature of it, I think really shocked some of the people who perhaps only now have come to realize the nature of the enemy that Israel faces and how they have turned this into a religious war. The argument that this is, you know, lone wolf operatives, something that we hear in the United States also, and then inevitably we find out that there was some connection to an imam, to a recruitment, to a training camp, to something. And here it appears that there is a Hamas cell that was trained to make people look like they were independent operatives.
There were three Americans who were slaughtered in this massacre. What do you think of the reaction from Washington?
So I'm going to come to that. And but I think that the reaction of Secretary Kerry was a very strong statement he made in Paris. I think the statement by the president was addressed the issue. But there's always the qualifications, and we see it in so many ways, about the nature of the incident. We need to see action, and action in this case means holding Abbas and the Palestinian Authority to account. It means that there has to be some sort of a consequence when they continue to engage in the incitement, and it has to be addressed. The even the Security Council issued a condemnation, which was a good statement. But at the same time, when the European Union and others are issuing statements, they're continuing to recognize the PA and to take measures to further enhance them. So they're being rewarded for at the same time that they continue to engage in the kind of outrageous incitement that leads to these incidents.
When Senator Schumer was on here this week, it sounded like even he was not satisfied with the reaction from Washington. It's outrageous that this is going on and that the White House, again, with three of the people being American citizens, do not react more strongly. We said the same thing at the time of the kidnapping when an American citizen was included in those who were kidnapped and then murdered. It is just, it's outrageous. And the Kerry statement, you know, it seems to be just words. The President of the United States makes sure to include a balance in every statement he makes. The fact that he even mentions in the statement that too many Palestinians have died is insane. And and to recognize the fact, maybe, that now at this point, Malcolm, unless the statistics are off, or unless this viral statistic is, you know, just something that started as a rumor, more American citizens have now been killed in 2014 by Palestinians than by ISIS.
Yes, that was said this week, and I assume somebody did some research in order to ascertain that that is correct. This attempt always to couch it in even-handed terms and to strike a balance and to talk about, you know, the responsibility of all parties to come, you know, to respond as if there is equal guilt or equal responsibility across the board, which is the point I'm making, that the failure to address, not just now, but on an ongoing basis, the issue of incitement, and that there's only lip service paid to it rather than consequences to it, that the failure to demand and to extract a price for failure to enhance it will only lead to further actions of these kinds and further continuation of the incitement of the issue, the higher bias of these constant references. And it was by Abbas himself. He can't say that it's, you know, people under him or things that he's not responsible for, people he doesn't know. And the president should have cited it and made the specific reference to that incitement that inevitably leads to people reacting and nothing is more emotional than those cries of Al-Aqsa is under attack, or you have to cleanse it, or you have to, you know, that the Temple Mount is being defiled. These are really serious things, and the, you know, going back to Oslo, when I remember when Dennis Ross admitted that they failed to give sufficient consideration to the whole issue of incitement and the role of the PA in this.
The reaction of the president to the very well-known, I mean, it's public knowledge across the board, that Israel likely will destroy homes of families of terrorists, right? I mean, it's not like they don't have warning on this. This is a pretty well-known fact at this point, going back to the beginning of the state and even earlier than that. And yet the President of the United States expresses disappointment in that action. I think it's outrageous. Wouldn't it have been sufficient to remain completely silent on that and not come out against Israel's proper punishment and reaction to this terrorist attack?
There is a lot of misunderstanding, I think, about it. I've had people, even people from the community, call me and say, this is, you know, why is Israel doing it? Why is Israel attacking? So first of all, Israel has very limited options as to what to do, because no matter what action it takes in response even to this so barbaric attack, and people don't understand the culture that we're dealing with. If you put these guys in prison, if you kill them, they become martyrs. They become heroes. They get extolled by Abbas and by others. They become they get squares named for them. They become role models to the next generation.
Yeah, but if you don't kill them, they end up in a prisoner release at some point in the future.
One second, but the people don't understand that the destruction of a house, which doesn't hurt anybody, it takes a toll on the family, is a deterrent. It does have a strong impact culturally, more than people in the West realize. And it seems to me that this, of all the punishments possible, is one that they ought to say, this is humane, this doesn't, sends a message, and it's a message that's visible to others that were contemplating it, that your family will pay the price. And in that society, that matters.
What about funds to the PA? Is there ever going to be American cooperation to finally freeze funds to encourage lawsuits against the PA because of these activities?
Well, you may know that the U.S. Court, the Southern District Court, ruled this week that the 11 Americans who were killed in terrorist attacks can go ahead with their lawsuit against the Palestinian Authority and the PLO. It's a $1 billion lawsuit. And it's been in place since, I think, 2004, and they finally ruled, and they will go to trial in a very short while. This is a major breakthrough again. So it does exactly that, to encourage, and there are more and more lawsuits being brought. And as you know, the lawsuit against the Arab Bank and others, so it's those directly involved, those who support them, those who help provide the funding, all have to be held to account, and there are measures being proposed, being contemplated by members of Congress right now that would deduct funds or from the Palestinian Authority, from the money the United States gives.
Right, but you need White House cooperation with that, right? And we know that any administration
Congress
wouldn't
can do a lot in this regard when it comes to allocation of funds. Now, does it mean that the White House can't bypass it or overcome it? Yes, but remember, in January you have what could be a veto-proof majority, especially on this issue, that there is a growing anger about the role of Abbas. And by the way, it's not just limited to the Congress. It's true amongst many of the Palestinians themselves. And so that threat might be a much more credible one in 2 months.
And by the way, it maybe this will wake everybody up to the fact that the enemy doesn't care where the Jews are. They don't want Jews in Israel. I won't even argue yet for a moment if they want Jews anywhere, but certainly not anywhere in Israel. You know, someone, tongue-in-cheek, obviously, but the point is well taken, wrote to me that, you know, that there are certain people, certain leaders encouraging people not to go to the Temple Mount. We've discussed this a million times. I'm speaking strictly politically. I'm not speaking halachically. So they said to me, tongue-in-cheek, you know, maybe we should discourage people from going to shul now. You know, this also incites terror. Obviously, the Arabs don't like the fact that you gather in a shul in northwest Jerusalem for morning prayers. At some point, we all have to realize they don't want us anywhere. And by the way, I saw a newsletter that came out this week, a notice from the Chovevei Shul in Yerushalayim, which you know very well, reminding everybody that they have panic buttons inside their two sanctuaries. Malcolm, I know that there's different systems in place, and you've you know, spoken about it many times, and I hope they're effective. But I think every synagogue in the U.S. and everywhere has to consider that type of installation of a panic button or something where they have immediate contact with the authorities in case a madman walks in.
We have pushed this. We have created an agency, SCAN, to help synagogues do prepare. We train people for what happens if a gunman comes in. We are training schools so that teachers can be, you know, equipped and know how to respond on the spot. There are things. I mean, you can't prevent every attack. You can't guarantee that the, you know, there isn't going to be another lone gunman somewhere, as they call it, or agent who will try to penetrate a synagogue, an institution, a school. But you can take prophylactic measures, and you are right. It's critical. You saw that there was a rabbi who told their people to come with guns to shul or to bring their telephones to shul.
Yeah.
Other measures, which we may not do, but we can do things that enable us to have a relationship with the local police, so then you know who to call, when to call someone if, God forbid, there is an incident. Most people will just panic, and that's
right.
Not the response. You have to be trained so that you know, at a time when your brain may not be functioning fully, how to respond to an incident.
Man, stay alert during Shemona Esrei, I guess. And don't think that just because it happened in Yerushalayim or it happened in Israel, that every Jew and anything noticeably Jewish in the world is a target. I mean, we know this. We know this from episodes that have happened here in the United States. We know this from, obviously, things that are going on in Europe. It seems after every Shabbos we hear about another incident that's occurred in some major city in Europe against either a Jew on the street or against a synagogue. It just, it's everywhere. And we have
it
to start.
Hardly gets. You don't even see the reports anymore on a lot of the incidents. It's already become, you know, accepted that this happens, and we're seeing it on our campuses, and we see it other places in the United States, let alone what we see in Europe. And the attacks in Yerushalayim are taking place because they know that's the most sensitive place for all of us, and that they can call, they get more attention than when they carry out an attack in other areas. It doesn't mean that things haven't happened in other areas. We should also remind people that these are taking place in very limited areas, that life in Israel goes on, that people shouldn't stay away from Israel because of it. It's quite the opposite. People should go. It is still safe. It is still a place where tourists and others should visit and see the country, that it's not a siege place. You don't, as I said, I came back yesterday. It's not a place where you see police everywhere in isolated areas, and especially the areas where we've had the unrest. You do see an increased presence, but Israel itself is still safe for people.
I agree with you. Israel is safe. My question is, and it's certainly Israel is safer than other places in the world, including maybe even the U.S. in some ways. My question is, what about here? Are we taking proper precautions and thinking about every noticeably Jewish place here in this country at this point? Because we said this when the Canadian attack happened. It's now in everybody's backyard. It's on our doorstep, everywhere. It's unavoidable at this point. Maybe people will realize that, you know, not traveling to Israel ain't going to solve the problem.
That's absolutely right. And you know, there is still more security in Israel than you have normally in the streets of any major city in the United States. And if you look at the numbers, the crime rates and things are lower there than in most other places.
America's one and only Jewish Moments in the Morning radio program, heard on listeners-sponsored WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, Rockland County at 91.9 on the FM dial, around the world on the web. jmintheam.org. Malcolm Honlein is with us. Weekly update here at JM in the AM. By the way, we should mention, because I don't want to lose sight of it as we discuss everything that's going on because of this terrible episode in Yerushalayim. I believe yesterday was the 30th anniversary of Jonathan Pollard in prison. Does that make sense?
November 21st is 30 years.
Today. So today.
Right. Is the 30th, is 30 years. It's just unbelievable to think of this miscarriage of justice. We have tried again, and we're hoping that this year when he's eligible for parole and he will get a hearing, God willing, during the year, that they will come to their senses, and that hopefully even before that, that the president will act on this.
Yeah, no question.
Keep the pressure on. If I can say something, just I thought about the tourists. You know, there was an interesting thing that came out this week in the midst of all of this horror, that the number of visitors from Muslim countries is shooting up. 125,000 have come from Indonesia, 73 people from Qatar, 13,000 from Egypt over the last few years, 5,000 this year, 23,000 from Malaysia, and isolated other numbers from different countries. And Kuwait announced this year that they would allow people this week. I mean, they would allow people to visit Israel and the PA in some sort of an organized package. So they're not afraid, and they come. I think it should be a message to, especially now, that people go. You know, we're facing an enemy that has become much more clever. You saw the latest weapon is that they shoot firecrackers.
Right.
So people's image is that, you know, they're shooting off firecrackers and they explode and they make noise. But that's not what they're doing. They reverse the firecrackers so that the lit end shoots against the soldiers or police. And they can do a lot of damage, have done damage. They burn people. And now they caught this massive shipment with 18,000 firecrackers, 5,500 lasers. I forgot the almost 5,000 tasers and other equipment shipped under the guise of being Christmas decorations. And the it shows what their intent is to do, to carry this out more and to do things in a way that makes it hard for the Western eyes to look at this and say, well, they're only shooting firecrackers against rubber bullets or against bullets, and that there's always this imbalance in it. It's not true. These are deadly weapons, and that they are clearly organized, that you don't get a shipment of two vast containers coming in this way if it isn't an organized action.
As long as they keep getting away with it. Strange week to lift all restrictions on the Temple Mount for Friday prayer, no?
Again, I think it's a response to the pressure, the things the Europeans and others have put on Israel about the exploitation by Abbas and others to say that this is changing the status quo. I think it's part of the promise they made to the King of Jordan when the Prime Minister went there and met with him together with Kerry about, and as you know, as part of the agreement that Dayan made, they put Jordan in charge of the waqf, of the trust that controls it, and this relationship obviously is very important. You know that in the Jordanian parliament, they said a prayer in honor of the two killers at the synagogue. And the so this is for the prime minister, obviously very sensitive in the relationship with Jordan and with the sanctions and with the threat of actions against them. So
did they hand out candy and sweets as well, like they did in so many other areas?
They didn't do that there, but they certainly did in the families in the cities where these guys, the village where these guys came from.
By the way, maybe this passed me by. Someone said that one of the terror organizations actually took responsibility for the attack. The PFLP actually took responsibility for the attack?
They claimed that these guys had an affiliation with them. But, you know, you never know what's true in this. People do.
Yeah, I would think it's to the enemy's benefit not to identify any group at this point and make everyone in Israel feel that, you know, this could happen randomly without anybody's sanction, which basically it's happening anyway.
But there's something more fundamental about this, Nahum, that to me, you know, my reaction, I'm almost numbed by all of this, that the standard today of beheadings and of physical attacks of this nature,
yeah,
of a person actually able to take a meat cleaver to somebody else's throat or body, or a knife, as the ISIS people did, and it's now become the standard in Yemen, in Lebanon, in Iraq, in Syria, in other parts where you have these rebel forces, and let alone, of course, ISIS doing it every day, and Iran executing people every day, often by beheading and hanging. But the whole standard and the level of barbarism that we have sunk to, and that there isn't a revulsion and a repulsion to this kind of barbarism. I don't even know another word to talk about the inhumanity that this represents, and it becomes the leading recruitment tool that ISIS can get 1,000 new recruits a month, and this is their major advertisement.
It's unbelievable.
We'll have to think about this.
Back in the Middle Ages.
Yes, exactly.
Unbelievable. Was there a possibility for Israel to take out Nasrallah this week, and they passed on it?
I don't know. I mean, I saw the reports too, but I don't know.
All Israeli leaders at this point are legitimate targets, according to the enemy. I guess it's been like that really for the last many, many decades. But I would guess that security around any high profile or even lower profile Israeli member of Knesset, cabinet member, etc. And obviously, I'm referring to the Lieberman threats. I assume that all those are stepped up at this point.
It is, but Lieberman's threat was specific about using an RPG, and it was uncovered. There was no actual attack, but there was also a threat against Eli Yishai and some others that got them additional security over the last week. But obviously, everyone is a target. And when people will ask, well, how can they go and attack Nasrallah? Nasrallah is a war criminal.
Of course.
Well, Nasrallah is not some innocent leader, you know, of a ragtag group. This guy has organized the murder and killings, and he is a legitimate target.
Spain recognizing a Palestinian state. Does Israel respond in a diplomatic way? Are they, I don't know, taking back ambassadors or doing anything that shows their displeasure with what they've done?
Israel is not going to, I think, recall the ambassador, except for some sort of a gesture. But first of all, these are not binding resolutions. They are symbolically right, very significant, but the condition of what the government said is that this only can go in effect after negotiations, after a process of negotiations in which leads to it, then they will recognize. That was, by the way, the same language that the French government used and others who were adopting these resolutions. And they're saying that it's not punitive. And if you look at the nature of the resolution, it's not quite the way it gets reported, because it doesn't mandate an action right now, and it doesn't have real consequences, except that it's a reward at a time when Abbas doesn't negotiate, continues the incitement, which is why I cited it before, because the message is clear that there's no price to pay. So why should he ever really come to the table? Why should he ever take the steps that one would demand of any other leader when he gets rewarded constantly with the additional recognition? And his goal is not to negotiate but to impose a settlement and to have the United Nations, to have the international community continue to isolate Israel, and the threats, which proved not to be true about that sanctions were being prepared. Haaretz reported it, and does not seem to be true that the Europeans were, but the Europeans keep telling them that about the construction, and if you go ahead with this and if you go ahead with that, and too often just one-sided declarations.
We're not going to speak next week. There'll be no weekly update next week, but this Monday is November 24th. That date is significant, Malcolm. 24th is the deadline, right?
November 24th is very significant. How significant it will be, we'll only find out. Secretary Kerry went to Geneva. We met yesterday in Washington with the leading experts in this area. The general consensus, I would say, is that there will be an extension, maybe 2 months, maybe 4 months. As you know, the president had promised that in 1 year that they would resolve this issue. And if they can't in 1 year negotiate, what's the point of an extension when you see the lack of cooperation, the lack of transparency, the fact that the IAEA does not have access to the military facilities, let alone the missiles and the weaponization, all that, which was not covered by the agreement, and the fact that the president sent a letter which as a tactic is a mistake, because the more the Iranians see how much they want to deal, the more they're going to demand, and the less cooperative they're going to be, because they feel that the other side is so hungry for it, meaning the U.S. and others, that they will try to extract the maximum for them and the minimum that they have to give. And if you don't have dismantling, if you don't have take advantage now of the drop in oil prices, Iran invaded their sovereign fund by $62 billion. There are even elements of the Iran Revolutionary Guard that have spoken about the need for a deal because of the economic conditions. But the West reaction only emphasizes that Khamenei's hard line is right. So we're going to have to see what happens in Vienna. There are three options. One is that we get an extension. Two is that we get a deal that is terrible, and what we've heard about the details that have come out is not a good deal. It's a bad deal. And third is that we get some other deal that we don't know about, that has been rumored also, that they've had a framework already in place and they just have to fill in the details. Congress obviously is very upset. They're looking to extend sanctions. It may have to wait until January, until the new Congress is in place, when they can have the majority that's necessary, and they also need a veto-proof majority for some of the measures. The administration has a lot of leeway. They don't have to go to Congress for approval, because if you notice, they're not signing it as an agreement. This is just an understanding between parties, so you don't need congressional approval for it. So this is a very eventful day in November 24th. I mean, we may know today much more, in fact, because of the talks that are ongoing in Vienna, and whether they will start softening the ground for an extension. And the question is then, what kind of sanctions? What price does Iran pay for not coming to an agreement? What do we do to shore up the Europeans and make sure that they're going to be in line on this? And the constant meetings with Zarif and the constant discussions doesn't reflect the reality that Iran continues its aggressive actions throughout the region. We saw it in Yemen, as we discussed many times. We saw it today. We see it in Syria. We see it all throughout the region. They're working against America's interests, against Western interests, their violation of human rights, their support for many of the barbaric groups that we talked about before, and that they could declare that for the first time the Shiites control four Arab capitals: Lebanon, Yemen, Syria, and Iraq. For them, they see this all as a massive historic victory that places them in a stronger and stronger position.
Reassure me, we have had more tenuous times in history, right?
Much more tenuous times. And I was talking to people who were talking about what Israel was like in 1948, in 1958, 1960, as compared to where we are today. And that there is a confluence of factors, but it's not just directed at Jews. Look how many more Christians are being massacred throughout the year. How many Muslims? 200,000 people plus in Syria, their own people, and there's no reaction or minimal reaction to it.
Yeah,
so there is it is a general collapse of the system, and it will take many years to repair it. And part of the problem is that there's an absence of American leadership, and the role of America in the region has changed, and you have all of these other forces at play, and you have Russia now playing, I think, a very counterproductive role in much of this, and including undermining the sanctions regime, China certainly, and the inability to rein them in. They all voted for the resolutions initially at the Security Council. And then on top of that, of course, you have Israel being thrown into the threat of a new election, so that also...
Oh, I would think that, well, maybe not. Compared to a week ago, that effort probably has stalled a drop, or you wouldn't agree with that?
Yes, but the point is that once you drop, the
possibility?
Once you get everybody in this mode, and everybody was talking about it, every meeting I had, came back to this thing, if elections... And it was never intended that elections would be right away. The question is, would it be 6 months, a year? until you get it past the Knesset, until you get everything in place, and then you need 3 months' notice, and you know you can't do it before Pesach. This was
the
on
summer.
To me.
The
you know, and then you say, well, the Shavuos comes in summer, and but so, it's not a time when Israel should have elections. It's a time when there has to be more unity, and they have to stand together to have.
That's the great. That's the greatest proof that elections are coming, because it's the best time that Israel should be having elections. Two quick things before we give you a week off. In a landslide victory, UCLA's resolution passed 8-2 among their senators, calling on the University of California to, quote, withdraw investments in securities, endowments, mutual funds, and other monetary instruments with holdings, end quote, in 11 U.S.-based companies linked to the Israeli occupation. Your reaction?
This is what we have warned about for how many years on the show about the BDS movement, and that while it was much stronger in Europe, we saw the increasing evidence of it here. Again, it's not a resolution that has any teeth or that can has any implementation, but it changes the climate. The more we accept it, the more the idea that Israel alone gets targeted. I don't know if people saw this supposedly funny but not funny clip, that a short film that was made showing Ami Horowitz at a California campus, and he's waves the ISIS flag, and he's supporting ISIS, and everybody walks by, a few people acknowledge him, etc. And he has an Israeli flag, and they're all condemning him and cursing him. And
oh, my
Israel
gosh.
As they walk by.
Oh.
And we see it, but we see it on campuses across the country, and which is why we need to inoculate our kids. We've got to educate them younger and younger to explain to them exactly what we are up against, what the nature of the, you know, the condemnations that continue to come of Israel. For what? For protecting its citizens? For being a democracy? For standing against these enemies? You know, you see how Egypt has now cleared a buffer of a kilometer, knocking down all the houses, because they found tunnels that are 800 to 1,000 meters, much longer than they expected, and they said this jeopardizes our security.
Yeah.
We see other countries now waking up and taking steps to do it. Israel's, by comparison, is far more limited. When the ISIS people steal the aid that's coming in to Syria that's supposed to go to feed families, and they steal the money, and and we begin to fund our own enemies, when there isn't this kind of recognition, and we look to Iran as a potential partner, it's all of these come together to pose a challenge. But the answer to the challenge is that we've got to stand together, we've got to have achdus in our community, unity in our community, and unity in reaching out to others to get them to understand what we're up against.
Finally, and you and I are not always at the greatest comfort level discussing other media outlets, but if people are in fact outraged, as many have indicated they are, with what CNN and maybe others did in reaction to the a massacre in Yerushalayim, then they should act on it, and you encourage them to go ahead and make those calls, write those emails, et cetera, et cetera.
I only encourage. You've got to demand that people do it. I tell people, call me to complain. I say, why are you calling me? Call CNN.
Right.
When they say six dead, then they'd say, oh, it's not six dead. Four Israelis, two Palestinians killed. First they said at a mosque, then they said at a synagogue. When NPR has descriptions of the activities as if Israel somehow, you know, inspired and arranged for these massacres, that the level of coverage and the description of what occurred, and here you had it, such a blatant act. There was a lot of sympathetic media, I should acknowledge, and at least initially. But right away, then, it goes back to the even-handed that both sides have, and both sides did this, and both sides did that. And you made reference to it coming from governments and our own government, in fact, and it comes from many other sources. You can't have this moral equivalence anymore. This gives a license to people to kill.
Yeah. Future of the Jewish peoples in the state of Israel. We'll speak in 2 weeks. Have a wonderful Shabbos. Malcolm Honlein is executive vice chairman of the Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations.